right now, let's bring you up to speed, shall we, with the London Football Assembly. We're going to talk about all the big issues to come with our summarisers at some of our games. We've got Bradley Allen here, and we've got a couple of mats for our delectation and delight as well. But first, what else is happening in the world of sport? Here's Emma Saunders.
Well, today's early kickoff sees Blackburn take on Swansea. It's 1-1 there, and Swansea are down to 10 men. Carl Bartley dismissed in the 7th minute of that game. That fixture is just one of the 11 fourth round FA Cup ties taking place this afternoon. Manchester United manager Louis van Gaal has blamed the bad state of the Cambridge United pitch after last night's FA Cup tie ended goalless. Cambridge will now travel to Old Trafford for the fourth round replay. In rugby, it's the final round of pool matches in European Champions Cup. Worcester take on Leinster, and Leicester must win at Ulster if they are to reach the knockout stage. Former England flanker Lewis Moody warns that Dylan Hartley needs to curb his bad behaviour or risk being replaced as his country's first choice hooker. Hartley has been suspended for a total of 50 weeks throughout his career and is thought to be having anger management training. And tennis now, world number one Novak Djokovic has beaten Fernando Verdasco in straight sets to reach the fourth round of the Australian Open in Melbourne. Two-time women's champion Victoria Azarenka is also through, and it's the first time in 4 years that Venus Williams has made it into the last 16 of a Grand Slam alongside sister Serena.
Emma, thanks very much. So we'll keep up to date with all those sports stories on BBC London throughout the afternoon. But let's bring in everyone who we are going to get the thoughts of over the next half an hour. Leicester City have arrived here at White Hart Lane. By the way, there's one player on crutches. Wouldn't have thought he's playing, Bradley. You never know. Or maybe they think there's some sort of miraculous FA Cup story out of that one. Our commentary game on digital radio this afternoon comes from the North East, where Sunderland take on Fulham. Matt Lockwood will be watching that one for us. Afternoon, Matt.
Evening. Afternoon, even. What am I talking about? Afternoon.
It's getting dark up there, so yeah. I know what you mean. And Matt Lawrence is on the south coast for us. Southampton taking on Crystal Palace. Matt, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Phil.
And, of course, Bradley Allen's alongside me here.
Hi, Phil. You OK?
Yeah, good. Right, let's get cracking then, shall we? There was a piece in one of the papers, a very well-respected journalist, Barney Roney, a blog he wrote earlier this week, talking about London football chaps and about how, despite the fact that lots of money has come in, despite the fact that we've got so many Premier League teams in the capital, as well as, obviously, 14 professional sides in the top four divisions, it is still, and has been, the North, in particular the North West, which is dominated when it comes to the trophies, in particular the league trophies. Is there a reason? What are the reasons? London should be attractive. It should be able to, as a place, we attract players. There's money to be thrown around by the big clubs with some of the big budgets. Why is it then that still we are not delivering enough league titles in particular, or Champions League titles, to the capital? Who wants to jump in?
I think the scenario with the London derbies that we have, Phil, that does make it increasingly more challenging for our London clubs to get the required results, certainly from a title-winning point of view. You know, the bragging rights amongst the supporters, there are more of those games rather than you compare maybe the Midlands or North West derbies that other teams have to face. And maybe that's a reason. Having said that, you know, you look at the success recently of Man City, you know, big investment there. Manchester United for a number of years under Sir Alex Ferguson. And of course, Liverpool back in the 70s, early 80s. Leeds before that, they had a successful side as well. Nottingham Forest with Brian Clough. So some of the clubs that maybe are, you know, the mainstay of their particular city, you know, have been the ones that have been successful. And the likes of Arsenal, Spurs, Chelsea, Fulham, QPR, you know, our London clubs have won and had success here and there, but not over a real long period of time and not really dominated perhaps as we'd hoped.
Matt?
Yeah, I just think historically it's always been Liverpool, Manchester United, previous to that, as Bradley was saying, Leeds as well. It's very hard to, or it has been very hard for London clubs to break that dominance. Bradley said it again, or alluded to it as well. Arsenal and the likes of Chelsea, they've kind of flitted in and out, but it is still, or it has been, very, very hard to break that pretty predominantly northwest dominance, which has been Liverpool and Manchester United. I know it's not as much certainly this season and maybe the season before, but of course now Manchester City have come into the frame as well with the multi-billions they've got as well, and even with the billions that Chelsea have got, it is very, very hard to break that dominance. They can break it maybe for a season or two, but it's very hard to break the dominance season upon season upon season, which is what Manchester United had in the 90s and the 2000s, and which is obviously what Liverpool had in the late 70s and the 80s. It is very, very hard to be that good for that long. It doesn't always matter how much money you've got. And of course, Bradley said it as well. It's very, very hard when you play 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, 10 London derbies as well. Those, you know, everybody says it, the form book goes out of the window when it's a derby game, and that is a cliche, but it also is very much the truth as well.
Why is that?
Well, as in regards to derbies?
Yeah.
Just because you are up for it as a player. Look, as a player, you want to win every game, of course, but you do understand there is that kind of added incentive, that added few percent from the terraces as well. You understand I haven't played in an Arsenal Tottenham derby, but I've played in a Millwall West Ham derby or a Millwall Crystal Palace derby, and you really do realise how much it means to the fans, and it does filter through to the pitch as well. Maybe it shouldn't do, but it is, and sometimes in games it is only that percent or two as well, and that does, it can spur you on. You feel exactly how much it means to the fans and to the club as a whole, and of course that does have an effect on you. And even if you're bottom of the league playing for Millwall against, say, a top of the league West Ham, you feel that you can overcome that 22-23 place difference just in a 190-minute game. And of course you have those 90 minutes over and over again if you play for a London club.
Matt Lockwood, I mean, you've experienced derbies away from London as well, you know, or you've certainly, you know, been, you know, north of the border where there's plenty of derbies. You played in Dundee where, you know, I mean, you don't get any closer when it comes to a potential derby between those two teams. I mean, you know, can you see how that has an effect on London teams if there's so many points that are, shall we say, dependent on those local rivalries?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think, you know, playing in the derbies that I have, I mean, I've played in the Bristol derby, the Dundee derby. I mean, Orient didn't really have any derbies so much. But, you know, when you see all these derbies around the, not even just around sort of the country, but around the world, you know, there are some really funny results that come in. You know, I'm at Sunderland today, and when Sunderland play Newcastle, you know, you can't predict what the outcome's going to be. It doesn't, like the guys were saying, it doesn't always go with form. So, you know, for the guys in London to be playing that many London derbies, it must take its toll. You know, and it's not saying that that's the reason, because it's not. You know, at the end of the day, Manchester United have been the best team in, you know, in the country for, you know, a long period of time, because they had the stability at the club with Sir Alex Ferguson in charge, and things weren't, you know, being chopped and changed around. And I think, you know, where, you know, clubs go wrong is they always look for a quick fix. They think, oh, results aren't going well, let's change the manager, that will work. And it doesn't. You know, people were calling for Arsene Wenger to leave recently, because, oh, he's been there a long time, he's taken the club as far as possible. But, you know, you think the job he's done there and how well he did, you know, in the period of time when, you know, the guys like Omri and stuff, and they were winning things. You know, I think teams need to have the stability to progress. And I think Chelsea now will probably have that, depending on how long Jose hangs around for. I think they could go on and maybe dominate the Premier League for the next sort of like few years.
The other point I was going to make in regards to that is the conversation which has been having. All this financial fair play is coming in. The one club that appears to be in a position which really could take advantage of financial fair play, because they've gone about doing their business in a very, very clever way as a business plan, is Arsenal. They're relatively debt-free. The stadium's paid for. 60,000 punters every week. And, you know, they can, you know, if it's about spending what you earn, their earning potential is not going to be based on anyone else putting money in. It is literally, they could generate huge amounts of income.
Well, with the news that was revealed this week about the earnings and the capabilities of the richest clubs throughout world football, Arsenal are in the top 10. And like you say, and it has been the case in recent seasons with the likes of Özil moving to the club, they're in a position now to buy some of the very best players from world football. And it's not necessarily going to affect them, because they've got a beautiful stadium. They've got 60,000 supporters every week. Their revenue streams are absolutely incredible, Phil. And coincided with maybe one or two homegrown players coming into the mix as well, they've almost created the perfect model for FFP, and that's why they will continue to challenge.
And if I come to all three of you in regards, let's look outside of the big clubs, the challenging clubs. London is the sort of footballing sort of centre in this country. Bradley, you've played for Queen's Park Rangers and Charlton in London. Matt, obviously, you know QPR and you know Leighton Orient very, very well. Matt Lockwood, Matt Lawrence, the likes of Fulham, the likes of Millwall, the likes of Crystal Palace. The health of the professional game is almost, you know, some people say no other city in the world could sustain this many clubs playing at such a high level in their domestic competitions. I mean, if you just look at the top two divisions, regardless of what happens elsewhere, you know, Orient almost played a role in that themselves this season. It's extraordinary, really. Is that a good thing? Does that show it's healthy?
Well, it obviously shows that it is very healthy as an economic base, and the fact that London as a capital city can sustain that many football clubs. But I think at times, certainly, teams have got to cut each other's throat. I think that's the only way possible, and that does happen to a fair degree. We have got so many fantastic football teams, and I'm not sure you even mentioned Brentford as well, Phil. London has just such a wealth of wonderful football teams, but you know, you kind of think that it's never going to happen, and I'm not suggesting it for a single second, but if you could merge some of those teams, then wouldn't they be so much better and so much stronger? As you say, there's no other capital city in the world that sustains that many teams. Let's not forget, not only obviously have we got Premier League teams, we've also got Championship teams, and our league, the Championship, the second tier in English football, it is probably, what, fifth, sixth, seventh biggest in Europe as well. It massively outweighs, certainly attendance-wise, and I think levels of play as well, of many other teams in the first tier in lots of other countries in Europe. So, yeah, I think it's absolutely magnificent for London as a whole. But again, without a shadow of a doubt, certain teams, of course, are going to cut each other's throats, whether that's in terms of youth products and academies. Like the catchment areas are only so big within London, of course, and we have so many different teams, and they're all vying for those good under 7, under 8, under 9 players. It's very, very difficult. But as I say, the crux of the matter is, for a whole, as a capital city, it's absolutely wonderful. And the wealth and the different types of football teams we have within London is absolutely magnificent.
I don't think we should lose sight of the strength of the support as well. I think they deserve to be commended, because I think if you look at other areas of the country, some that have fallen out of the Premier League, they've been propped up by the strength of their support. And some clubs have almost gone to sort of bottom of the Championship, even dropped lower than that at League One, bottomed out, and then they've come again. And that's only because, you know, horrendous financial situations that they've got themselves in, but it's actually been the good, honest, die-hard supporters that have stayed with them clubs, and they've started to come again and been on the rise. And, you know, they've got a lot to be thankful for, I think.
Yeah, Lockie, you know how important the club is to an area.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And like you say, the fans are the ones behind that. They make it. But, you know, just touching on what Matt was saying there, you know, London is a fantastic city. And you can tell the fact that all these foreign investors are coming to London clubs to put their money in, because they know that the economic state of the country is based in London. All that money in London, they know that that's where they're going to get returns and have success. And, you've got it at numerous clubs now in the capital, where these foreign guys come in and they think that there's a good reason to come to London, because there's more potential there.
Talking about finances and football and whatever, there was an interesting tweet last night. It is FA Cup weekend, so let's just touch on this. Cambridge United, brilliant result. They've got a replay up at Old Trafford in a week and a half's time, and that's going to generate a lot of revenue for Cambridge United. But there was a tweet I saw last night which suggested, is it actually something worth celebrating that Cambridge United could virtually fund a huge proportion of their season with one game, whilst the week's wages virtually certainly the month's wages for one of their players would probably fund the squad for the whole year? Does that just show the disparity that now exists within the game? Is that the worrying thing? It's a great thing, it's a bad thing.
Well, it's enabled us...
Sorry, Bradley. I'm not sure that's a worrying thing. That's a fact of life, isn't it? That's the fact of capitalist society. When you're dealing with the top, the higher echelons of any profession, that's what happens. If you're talking about a director of Tesco's who probably pulls in, you know, £1 million a year. But if you're talking about somebody who's stacking shelves in a store in Haywards Heath in West Sussex, they probably earn £7.50 an hour. You know, that's what happens. That is that's a difference at any level of any business. And of course, I think it's an absolutely truly wonderful thing that Cambridge, with one game alone, can pay their wage bill for the next year. I think it's absolutely magnificent. I think it's exactly what the FA Cup's all about. Let's be honest, millions of people around the world are not going to tune in to watch a Cambridge versus, I don't know, a Tranmere game or something like that. Whereas millions of people are going to tune in to watch Manchester United Liverpool on a Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Look, we can't watch it here in the UK, but millions, if not billions of people around the world can also watch that, which is why teams like Manchester United bring in those multi-million pound Sky contracts, and the Premier League sells the rights around the world as well, which is also why Wayne Rooney can get paid £350,000 a week. Look, I don't agree with those massive sums of money, but it's an economic reality, and it's why these things happen. I honestly think it's a wonderful thing what happened at Cambridge last night. I think they did fantastically well, and I think we should celebrate the FA Cup, and we should celebrate the fact that, yes, you know, they can sustain themselves for another year just through one game of football. I think that's brilliant. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
It's great news, certainly for Cambridge. I think what we've, you know, understood now for a long period of time is the financial clout, and that going from strength to strength with the bigger clubs, those playing in Champions League, the television rights, the money that they have. It's just not filtered down in the game. I think it was more of a level playing field, perhaps, between the pyramids of football when we were playing, you know, sort of late 80s, early 90s. It's not like that now. You know, those clubs at the very highest level, you know, they're a million miles away from a club like Cambridge in a financial sense. The frustrating thing for me, Phil, is there's no transfer levy that's been brought in, and the distribution of the television money has not gone to some of them clubs, because they still have some good coaches, some good young players there. And if there was that little bit of investment in grassroots football as well, then the overall game within Britain would be much healthier as a result. And it's not quite like that. You know, you've got the big clubs now with all the money that are stockpiling some of the very best players, as Matt said, and that's not necessarily healthy. You know, Chelsea have got over 30 players out on loan.
Yeah.
It's clever. It's a loophole in the FFP. Why have they done that? Well, none of the other clubs in the Premier League can get their hands on them players. They're playing usually abroad or somewhere else, and they know that they can't play against Chelsea and cause Chelsea problems or cost them points in the Premier League.
Matt Lockwood?
Yeah, no, the guys have pretty much covered it. And, you know, it's you know, last night was fantastic for Cambridge. And as Matt was saying, you know, that's just the way football is at the moment. You know, the rich clubs are getting richer, and the smaller clubs, you know, sadly are getting smaller, you know. Yeah. But the FA Cup is fantastic. You know, it allows teams like Cambridge to have those games, you know, to make that money for the season, and it makes it all worthwhile. You know, people say that, you know, the FA Cup, has it lost its edge and stuff? For the bigger clubs, maybe, who knows, but for the smaller clubs, it never will do, because there's always that little pot of gold at the end of the rainbow that they're all, you know, fighting to get through to that third round and just hopefully, you know, draw out a big club. You know, when I was at Orient, it was exactly the same. You know, if we got through to the third round, you know, the boys would be sat by the TV waiting for that draw to come on, just praying for a Premier League club to come out the hat. You know, and it's fantastic, and it's great. And, you know, the gap's always going to get bigger and bigger between the bigger and the smaller clubs. That's inevitable, the way, you know, the way that it's going these days. But, you know, as long as that, you know, the smaller clubs can get these days like that Cambridge did last night, it's brilliant. Absolutely fantastic.
And talking of money, another issue, it's been suggested. There's disquiet, I think, for some Brentford fans heading up to Norwich, for example, with the ticket prices for the away fans this afternoon. Mark Devlin, who's the chief executive at Brentford, is suggesting maybe there should be a cap, there should be a limit, or there should be some sort of bog standard away ticket charge for football clubs, because, you know, away fans help make the game, away fans are important. You know, when you were playing away from home, all three of you, you'd appreciate those supporters that do make the extra sacrifice to actually travel to the games.
It's a huge commitment, Phil, but they can obviously in their own way generate an added atmosphere wherever that particular fixture may be, and we mustn't lose sight of that. You know, many travel up and down the country midweek, return, you know, at ridiculous hours. They commit weekends to go and follow their beloved teams, and you know, once again, you know, we're back to, you know, the support from our passionate supporters. They need that encouragement. They need to be looked after. We can't lose sight of it, and we can't become a generation of football watching supporters from the couch and just watching it from TV, because the atmosphere, like the guys have already said, across our leagues, that passion, that enthusiasm for the game is up there and overtakes many, many other leagues throughout Europe and the rest of the world.
Should there be then a flat fee, or should it be some sort of, you know, if you're playing the Championship, the maximum away fee should be X, Y or Z, Matt?
If that could happen, that would be absolutely wonderful, but it would obviously take every single chairman in the Championship and one in the Football League sitting around the table with all their, you know, heads of the commercial departments as well. I really do think that that should happen, whether it be levied or capped at maybe a £20 or £25 mark. I think that would be absolutely wonderful, because let's not forget, of course, all, you know, it really is the hardcore guys who go to the away games as well, and there are people who will go to 46 games a season as well, bare minimum. And obviously on top of their ticket price, they're paying for a programme, they're paying for the train travel as well. I travelled obviously down to Southampton today on the train with many other Crystal Palace fans. The train was absolutely mobbed. You've paid an awful lot of money to come down here on the train. You obviously can't sit down because they haven't, you know, the rail firms haven't put on enough carriages onto the train. It was absolutely standing room only. It's absolutely magnificent that so many fans do that. But I think certainly at Premier League level as well, nearly all away allocations sell out as well. I know Crystal Palace have sold out of their allocation today at Southampton. I think it's in a week or two's time away at Leicester as well. So those, you know, a team like Leicester or Southampton will know that those tickets will be taken up whatever, almost whatever the price. So it does make it very, very difficult. Again, it's all about, you know, the economics of it as well, and why as a commercial department would you try and cap a price at £25 when you know full well you can probably charge £42, £43 and you can still sell out your allocation. That's up to these Football League or Premier League chairmen, and I think they should do it as well. There is enough money in the game to sustain a £25 ticket price for the away allocation. I think you really should do that, because it is, you said it, Phil Bradley said it as well, it is the hardcore support who go away, and I think they should be supported financially as well.
Yeah, Matt Lockwood.
No, exactly the same as what Matt was saying there. That would be the difficult part, because these clubs that sell out of their away allocation every game, the chairman would be like, well, why would we bring our prices down from £40 to £20? Because we sell out regardless. Yeah. And it's difficult. I mean, you know, the lower league teams, you know, they could probably do it fairly easily, because, you know, the away support probably isn't as big as in the Premier League. You know, and they could sort of maybe try and encourage away supporters to come by saying, look, you know, you come down, it'll be £10-15 to get in. Yeah. You know, because it is such a big commitment. You know, travelling around the country to watch your team is expensive. It takes a lot of commitment from these guys. But, you know, the fans, especially the fans that we've all met in our careers, are so passionate about the team. You know, they will literally follow them wherever they go. When I was at Orient, we had one supporter actually used to come away wherever we went pre-season. He would book his summer holiday around where we went pre-season. One year he was buzzing. We went to Antigua. He couldn't believe his luck. But, you know what I'm saying? But he was that committed to watching his team that he would follow them wherever they went in the world. And you know, there's so many guys like that. And it is amazing. That's the thing. And so for clubs to sort of reward that and by letting them in cheaper would be brilliant. But I'm not sure that many will agree to it.
No, that is the fear. Matt and Bradley, thank you very much for the time being. More from all three of them as we build up to our 3 o'clock commentaries on BBC London 94.9. That's it for the first hour of the programme. If you've just tuned in, you've missed West Ham's on-song midfielder who wants to make the fans happy hammers.
For me, it's very important when the family is happy, and then me, I'm happy as well. When I'm my family happy, I can produce my game and